This audio was recorded on July 31st, year 2011. On May 17, 1999, when I, Richard Joseph Michael Ibrani, was living in Chimayo, New Mexico, Michael Diamond brought a lawsuit against me for the mailing list I took from his so-called monastery, and the trial was on June 28, 1999.
Right now, we're going to be talking about the mailing list incident that went on up at the monastery when Brother Michael took me to court on it and all that. And this is after when he expelled me from the monastery. I took the mailing list out with me. And I'll explain to you how that happened. And we'll get into and what happened with the lawsuit that followed after that. When you leave the monastery under the Benedictine rule, the superior has to, although we weren't Benedictines, so forget that nonsense. We went over that before. We're not Benedictines. But this is any rule of any monastery. They have to give you back the exact money that you gave them when you entered. So when you enter, you have to give them all your money, and I did. I gave them all my money, and I gave my car over to my friend I had in Newark, New Jersey, John Sevilla. I gave him the car. And just gave it to him as a gift. And I gave Brother Michael all the money I had, which is $2,000. So, and they're supposed to keep it in an account or something just in case you leave. And they got to give you the $2,000 that you came in with when you leave. That's all monasteries. That's a basic rule. So, and, but it was in, Brother Joseph even had it written up in his rule. So it was part of the rule up there. So when I was getting ready to leave, I asked Brother Michael to give me back the $2,000 that he was bound to give me. And then he came up and says, well, Brother Richard, I don't have $2,000, but I can give you $1,000. And I said, fine. Well, if you don't have it, I says, well, then what I wanted to really get was the computer. Because on that computer, I had all my... I didn't have any computer at all anyway, and I was used to working on that computer. And I had all my documents. There was two computers we had up there. One really good one and one medium one. The medium one I worked on, but stored all my backup documents on the good one. So we had backups. So I wanted to get that computer anyway. So I said, okay, look, just give me the $1,000, and you give me that computer in the room, and we're even. I'll take the computer. The computer wasn't worth more than $100. It was really a piece of junk. So really, what he did is he violated the rule, and he beat me on the money, you know. But he didn't. So I said, just give me the computer. Now, also, there was a motive in the back of my mind that I was thinking, I'm going to get this mailing list out of this monastery one way or the other. Because his big thing was to prevent me from speaking to all these people that I were told about the Sede Vacantis position and about the teachings that a public heretic cannot be pope. So I wanted to show them Bull Cum Ex Apostolatus Officio, Canon 188.4, and all the other theologians and all the other teachings that a public heretic loses his office. So I wanted to get it to all the people on the mailing list, and he was preventing me from doing that and silencing me. But I was bound and I was determined to do whatever I had to do to get that mailing list out of that monastery. I don't care if I had to hire spies to come up there or get commando raids up there. That list is coming out with me. And I don't care what. Because I don't care if I got to tell one of those we call over here non-malicious falsehoods. Like when St. Raphael said that he was an Israelite, Azarias, when he really was an angel. When Judith went out and told Holofernes that she was his friend and that she wanted to go on his side and that God delivered the Jews into the hands of Holofernes, and she did it to deceive him and cut his head off, and it was a very heroic thing. So there's precedence for non-malicious falsehoods and even for spies and all that. So my intention was, that mailing list is coming out with me no matter what. That was my main duty, to get the Catholic Church's teachings out to these people no matter what I got to do. But I saw my opening here when he said he only had $1,000. I went, well, okay, give me the computer for the extra $1,000, and we're even, and on that computer was the mailing list. So I figured, I'm going to take the computer out. He said, yes, you can have it. I got the mailing list on the computer to boot. I says, good, I got the mailing list, you know, and it's coming out with me. And he wasn't thinking about that at that moment. So I said, here's my opening. I got the mailing list. There it is. And it's part of the deal. So what happened was, when he let me go, I packed everything up. I got the computer in here and everything. Sal Montesano Jr. came up, and he's the one that actually drove me out of the monastery, and he brought me down to Philadelphia where he lives. That's where Sal lives. And I had Harry Rue, who was living in Wayne, New Jersey. That's the guy's place where I was staying at. He was living in a senior citizen house. That's where I was going to stay. I ended up staying there longer than I thought. You know, 6 months. You're only really supposed to stay in the guy in the rooming house. It was a senior citizen home, and he was living in there. 2 weeks is only maximum time you can have visitors. I stayed for 6 months there, slept on his couch. I had $1,000 stashed away, and so I was my friends in New Jersey. I was with them, but what happened was, getting back to the mailing list incident, Sal Montesano Jr. came up and. I took my Sacred Heart picture and all my stuff out that I had, packed it up, and then we drove down to Philadelphia. Harry Rue came and picked me up in Philadelphia, and I brought all my stuff loaded up in his car and went to Wayne, New Jersey, and ended up staying in that house. I had the computer, which is, and I'm just going, I got it. Here's the mailing list. And so that was my intention right from the beginning. And if I couldn't get the mailing list that way, believe me, I had a lot of other ways in my mind of what I was going to do. Because when it comes to that stuff, it's warfare. I'm going to get this information. And I did. When I was up there, I smuggled out so much information. And that's how I converted quite a few people over to the city of composition, because he forbid me to get on the phone. I couldn't speak to anybody anymore. I wasn't allowed to even mail stuff out anymore. So what I did is, when a lot of these people, I told them about the position, they're saying, "Brother Richard, you never sent me the information. You never sent me the bull, cum ex apostolatus officio. You never sent me canon law 188.4, number 4. You never sent me all the other teachings about how public heretics lose their office." And I knew who they were. So when orders were going out, I would go in there and sneak the teachings inside the orders before they went out, and then seal them up, and they would go out. And Brother Michael never knew I was sneaking them into their orders. And that's how a lot of people got those state of economy. Now, imagine, that's like smuggling dogmas around, like I'm doing something sinful. It was supposed to show you sins of omission. This kid was committing humongous sins of omission, withholding Catholic dogmatic teachings to defend his own little comfortable position up there, because he didn't want to lose all his followers and take the city for composition. And so he's doing the same thing he's accusing other people of doing. Like I said before, when I left, they said, "Brother Michael, you believe John Paul II is the Pope and you don't obey him because you believe he's a heretic and he's doing things wrong. Well, I'm not going to obey you, even though you're my superior, because you're now committing sins of omission and you're withholding the truth. That's criminal negligence. That's sins of omission. That's withholding the truth. That's a mortal sin, and I'm not going to partake in it." So that's when we all split and everything. You know, I'm thinking, I want to get that mailing list and I'm going to send it out to everybody. So then I got the mailing list on the computer, and I brought it back with me. And all my time in New Jersey, I was living in the particular senior citizen rooming house. I didn't have no camera. I didn't have anything in which I can really do my strange voices, because I wanted also the thing I promised the people. If you listen to my Second Coming of Jesus Christ tape, I promised the people that I will get you the information on John Paul II. Well, you know, that didn't happen until, if you look at the dates, I think I did the Second Coming of Jesus Christ in 1996. When was the Strange Voices done?
That would be 99.
Okay, so it took me 3 years to fulfill that promise. The whole first year up in that monastery, after I did the Second Coming of Jesus Christ, that was it for everybody. Said, "Lock the kid up, he's a raving maniac. He's an anti-Semite, he's a nut, lock him in the cage." Literally, keep him in the monastery, pacify him. Don't bother him too much, but he ain't never going to speak again. And that was really the intention of Brother Michael. And he had Gruners and a lot of people calling him on the phone telling him, "Don't let Rich speak again." You know, because Brother Michael went nuts because he didn't become famous. He became unfamous after I spoke. And he was waiting to be famous. Hey, if Rich is one of the witnesses, we're going to go to town. He probably thought he was the other one. And I wasn't sure who the other one was. So he's probably thinking, we're going to do good. It was a complete opposite after that particular Second Coming to Jesus Christ tape. So now I'm promising these people all this information. Then, in the meantime, I come across the study of the compositions and find out the truth of all that. And now I got a lot of stuff to tell these people. And then it becomes evident after about a year up there. That's all I was up there about it with him, was about a year. It seemed like it was a lot longer than that. But I got a lot of time to study and put some information together. And then then we're at the point where now I owe this to the people. It's obvious this kid's never going to let me speak again. And that's basically even what he told me when he let me go. You know, this is a contemplative monastery. We mostly, that's what he said. We're contemplative, and you know. I told him that's a lie, because we're not totally contemplative. We make controversial videos. And we have to answer people, and we have to respond to them. We're not totally contemplative. That's a big lie. He let me go because I held the study of composition, and he didn't. And that was it. So I'm determined to use the mailing list. But I'm determined to use it as soon as I get my strange voices out and I can present the evidence against John Paul, to which I did. But it took 3 years later to do it. I couldn't do it in New Jersey. I explained it in the... you'll hear later on in how I tried to do it. So when I found out I couldn't do it in New Jersey because I didn't have the cameras, then all of a sudden the friends I had there backstabbed me and they betrayed me and they wouldn't help me and left me alone over in the rooming house. And I was now working for my... friend I used to have who was an optician in New Providence, New Jersey, and they completely withdrew all their support. As soon as I finally did get like a secondhand, really dinky camera from that Hank Sanati again, and I was trying to do the filming by myself. I had the camera set up in this little rooming house, you can picture it. I put the camera on, I would go in front of it, I tried to put the scripts up, I went like that, and it wasn't working, and I said, the thing isn't right. It was like a... I said, this is frustrating. And I says, Lou, I got to do this over in your place, and he didn't let me do it. So I still couldn't get it done in New Jersey, but I had the mailing list, I had the computer, and I'm just waiting to use it. So then when I finally went out to Mexico with Felix Martinez, he invited me to live with him, I was living with him. That's the first opportunity I finally got to go out there and put together the Strange Voices Part 1 and Part 2 and Part 3 even. I didn't put Part 3 up because there's some things that are not 100% accurate on it. I have better teachings on the loss of offices. That's the only reason I didn't put that up. I may modify it one day and put it up. The main thing I wanted to get up there was the evidence against apostate anti-pope John Paul, to which I had loads of it. And I just had tons of it. And I finally was able to get that done. Felix helped me with that in Chimayo, New Mexico, which is about... 18 miles from Santa Fe, about a half hour.
You go out on the road, it says 18 miles.
18 miles from Santa Fe, and it's about 8 miles from Espanola, where the conquistadors were. But staying at his place, at Felix's, I finally was able to get the videotape done, and that's when I said, now the mailing list is ready. I am now going to put out the videotape, and I'm going to send it out. I don't know, he might have had like 50 or 60 or 80,000 people on there. I don't know how many he had. It was quite extensive mailing list that he had. Now, he actually technically got a lot of parts of that from Father Gruner, too. As far as like three mailing lists, Gruner's mailing list, someone else's mailing list, and a bunch of these amalgamated mailing lists that he himself was using. And Brother Joseph was using down at the Most Holy Family Monastery in New Jersey, and then he brought it up to him, with him to New York, upstate New York. So I go in here and I got the mailing list and I'm ready to use it, and we print it out. What I did is I advertised on just one sheet folded up in about, it was big paper. What's that big paper? Legal paper. What is legal paper?
It's legal sheet.
What's the size of it? 11 by 14 or something. And I folded into three, and I had two sides on. I had the order, and it went out. And Felix and his family helped me with the mailing labels. And you should have seen all the stuff we had. And out of maybe about 80,000 people, I don't know how many we sent it out to, I got like 400 people responded, 450. Not everybody was ordering stuff. I would even give it to free. I told them if they had no money, but it wasn't about money. It was about really mostly just getting it out there. I think about 430 people responded, or 450 or 430. Not a lot of people, but a lot of people that knew me, didn't know where I was, then were calling me up. Rich, we thought you were dead. Where are you? Oh, I'm glad you're still alive. Oh, this and that. That dummy Malachi Martin called me up, that dumb bastard. I blasted him, you know. Long story on him, but I only spoke to him once. I said, how do you even get my number? I have no idea. But I got on the phone with him. I said, look, I says, how could you stay in that church? You're a heretic yourself. And I went at it with him. And Jerry Maddox called me up when I was in here. I spoke to Jerry, and at that time I don't think Jerry held a city of conscience position, but he, after I spoke to him eventually, and other evidences, he did come around on that position. But the point is, I got a minimal response. 430 people, wasn't a lot of people. And it got back to, of course, to Brother Michael, that Ibrani is, I guess some people wrote him and says, Ibrani's alive and well, he's in New Mexico, and look at this, he put this thing out and all that. Well, Brother Michael got furious. He's all about lawsuits. He loves suing people, you know. If you ever read the scriptures, you should learn your best. I'm not saying you can't avoid all lawsuits. Sometimes you need to go to court. But let me tell you something, you better have to pull my teeth to go to court, because you should not want to, and you should try your best to avoid the courts. He loves litigation. He threatens people. Anytime they even mention something wrong, I'm going to bring you to court and get my lawyers. He sounds like a Jew. That's not what Catholics do. Matter of fact, even once when the St. Benedict Center came out and said something derogatory about him and me, they thought they were the two witnesses, and Brother Michael thought he was one of the witnesses, and he, this goofball, they were kind of making a joke, condemning both of us. Brother Michael got angry, and he threatened to sue them. I didn't say anything. I just let it go, and I'll go on with it. I just defended myself in another way. And then Brother Andre comes out, they write out, and they go, one of the monks of the two is now bringing us to court on a lawsuit. I will not say who it was. He really should have said who it was, because then he could, but it was the nefarious Brother Michael. So they had to back up and apologize, or else he was going to take him to court. So they did some type of apology and said, well, we didn't say that. And Brother Michael said, I didn't say that. Brother Michael lied himself on all that stuff. But my point is, he loves to go to court. He loves to sue. He's got the Jew behind him. So here he is, suing me now. I get a lawsuit in the mail because I used his mailing list, he says. And I get served with this lawsuit from him. And in the lawsuit, he didn't only want the mailing list back. He was talking about damages. He was talking about 10 times damages plus $100,000. You got to see the stuff he was asking for. It was outrageous. It was almost like $100,000. I don't know, $100,000. It was 10 times the damages. I want him this. And then I want to go after him for criminal charges if I can get him. So when the lawsuit came down, it was like all these different charges. I mean, it was like massive. And I went, oh man, that devil never sleeps, right? And now he's chasing, he tried to shut me up in the monastery for 1 year, and now he's trying to shut me up in New Mexico with the mailing list incident. And now, I said, well, I had no money, by the way. I got such few orders, though, 450 responses, but very few orders. And the orders I got cost for everything I put into it. So I literally had $0. Felix Martinez was supporting me. I hope someday God gives this kid the grace to come back to his senses and come into the church where he belongs, and his family, at least him, and hopefully his family. But right now he's an apostate himself. He ended up aligning himself with the Diamond Brothers in the long run. I don't know where he is today. So what happens, I got this giant lawsuit on my hand, I got no money, I got $0 in the bank. I said, here, this guy, it really amounted to something like $100,000 and 10 times the damages, and you got to be kidding me, man. You can't get blood out of a rock, but leave it to a Jew to try to do something like that. And he had the same spirit of an evil Jew. So I got no money in the bank, so I said, even if he wins the case, what's going to happen here? So I went before the original hearing, which was in Santa Fe. It was before this Jewish judge. I forget his name, but he was a Jewish guy. And he was the judge. And for the preliminary hearing. And he said that I got to get a lawyer. And I said, Your Honor, I got no money. He says, well, you can't go to in New Mexico, it's a law. You're not allowed to defend yourself in the civil court. You need to have a lawyer. And I said, I don't have no money. And he said, well, let me give you a list of all these pro bono lawyers. Well, we know what happens to pro bono lawyers. That's the biggest lie you ever heard of. There's no such thing. Maybe they do it once or twice, one or two people as tokens to make you believe they do it. It's a big lie. So the judge gives me this list of all these pro bono lawyers, and not one of them wanted to help me. And that was the ideal case. I had no bank account even. I had no money. I had literally, I had zero. I couldn't get no pro bono lawyer. Some guy I knew in Texas who was a lawyer came up and visited, and he said, I'll try to help you because at least I'm a lawyer, even though I don't have any license in New Mexico. Maybe the judge will let me speak for you. So we go into the court, and he tries to get up, and I said to the judge, I said, Your Honor, the list you gave me, and he checks it too. I says, I called everyone and checked them all off. There ain't no pro bono lawyers in New Mexico that want to take none that are going to take my case. So, how about this lawyer from Texas? He's a friend of mine. He got up, spoke to the judge. She says, no. He says, we don't allow any outside lawyers, anybody else, to defend. Well, at least it's better than no lawyer. I'm a lawyer at least. No. Okay, in this case, we're going to have to let Richard defend himself. And he had no choice. What are you going to do? Why don't you go put a gun to the head of one of these pro bono lawyers that lie to you and tell you they give you free service and say, I'll blow your brains out unless you take care of the kid for free? Why are you lying to the court system? He had like 5, 10, or 8 names on here, and none. They don't want to help you. So I said, okay, it's obvious. I have to defend myself. I got to study the laws. And it took a lot of time from me. But in the end, it didn't cost me one penny, and it cost the Diamond Brothers a whole heap of money. In the end, and you'll see what happens as this thing turns out. So, I can't get a lawyer. I got to defend myself in court. I got to start studying the laws. And fine, okay, I do it. I do what I have to do because it was worth it. And the worst thing that happened, though, was after I got the preliminary hearing, I got another notice about, because then judge asked me how many people responded. I told him. And then 430. And then I got a notice about a week or 2 weeks later where the Diamond Brothers put back in account another motion, whatever you want to call the thing, to prevent me from communicating with those 430 people even. So I can't even talk to them. Because the idea was the judge says the mailing list is frozen. You cannot use it. I understood it. Then I said, Your Honor, what about the 430 people? And he didn't say anything about that. He said, okay, you can do that. Their lawyer put in a counter motion. No, I don't want him to do it. There's a danger. And he put in all this stuff about the reputation of the diamonds and all that. So the judge then comes out and puts out a counter order. And he says, you can't use it, the 430 people. I put in a counter motion. And then I have to go back down there in front of the judge on the counter motion on the 430 people because now I got orders waiting to go out. And the judge says, Your Honor, this is impossible. It's impractical. It doesn't even make sense. These 430 people know where I live. They now got my phone number. When they call me up, am I supposed to say, don't call me on the phone, leave me alone? If they knock on my door, I got to tell them, get away from me. I got leprosy. I can't even talk to you. They now know where I am. I says, is that just that you can then tell these 430 people that want to speak to me? What do I have to tell them when they call me on the phone? I can't speak to you. The judge told me I'm not allowed to speak to you and hang up on all 430 and renege on all those offers. He says, it's not practical. I says, it's not even reasonable. I said, even if you said that, they're still going to seek me out. They're going to come over at my doorstep and ask for information. How can I prevent that? So the judge accepted that motion. He said, okay, I understand your point. I'll let you communicate with those 430 people, but no more. I want the names of every one of them so that I know who they are, and you can't communicate with anyone else. So I won that little portion. That enabled me to get my orders out. I'm going home saying, this is straight out of the hell. You know the picture where the devil's trying to swallow the Blessed Mother up, the woman who's running, and the black cloud, the big demon is running after you? Everywhere I go, they're trying to silence me. I said, this diabolical bastard is following me down into New Mexico, and he's telling me I can't send out to these people who want to get my tapes. I said, this is straight out of hell. So, but the judge did concede on that point, and I was able to continue and communicate with these people. I don't even know if it was 430, so I could be wrong. I could even be wrong on that number, but that's not the biggest issue. It could be even half of that. It could even be 200. I don't know what the real number was, but whatever it was, I was only going to communicate with them. But at least that was a minor victory. To me, it was major though, because I was able to fulfill the orders and I could speak to these people. So they lost that particular part, but the rest of the mailing list was frozen anyway. So then we're going through the whole court process of preparing for the trial and all that, and all the charges they put in were outrageous. I mean, it, literally speaking, it was like, I want to charge him for all the costs of the mailing list. I, of course, the loser has to pay for the... I would have had to pay for his lawyer. I would have had to pay for... 10 times the amount of damages they had, like all these kinds of damages, it would have come to some outrageous amount. And, you know, and it's interesting because the Diamond Brothers lawyer came up to me in the beginning and I told the lawyer, I says, look, I don't know why he's doing this. I don't have no money. So even if he wins, you can't get blood out of a rock. And the lawyer said, I told him that too, and I don't know why he's doing it. It's almost like it reminded me of Pilate says, I knew they delivered him up for envy because his lawyer knew that. He said, I told him. Why are you bringing this kid to court? He got no money. Just wanted. I told the lawyer, I'll give him back the mailing list, drop the lawsuit, it's a waste of time and money, and he wouldn't do it. And I told the lawyer, and the lawyer told him, he says, I told him, you got no money. So even if you win the case, you can't get blood out of a stone. He already said he'll give the mailing list back. You can make an agreement on that, and it doesn't have to go to court. I want him to cut. I want this. He must have thought I might have been hiding money or something. I wouldn't hide no money. I had nothing. Or he just wanted to get me, really. And then what happened was, it wasn't even that. He wanted to bring it on to criminal charges. He wanted to get me locked up. You got to see this thing. It was a mess. So his judge, I can see. I told him, I'm his lawyer. I got to do the job, you know. I told him that he's wasting his money because even if he wins, he's going to lose. Well, that's ended up what happened. But so then we're getting ready to prepare for the trial. The Diamond Brothers have to face their. They have to come and face me. They accuse me. Now they got to face me in court. That's one of the rules in court. You have to be face to face. They said, well, it's too much money for us to fly from upstate New York down into Mexico, and we can't make it. And the judge says, well, in all justice, you have to face him or the court is thrown out. And it was a big issue. And then the judge said, well, there's one thing we could do that's done very rarely. We only allow it once in a while. You could have a telecommunication conference where they're on their end, you're on their end, the lawyer's over here, his lawyer's over there. You take the transcript and bring it into court. But I have to approve it. And if I don't approve it, it doesn't go to court. Now, this is probably something stupid I did. I should have not approved it because then it would have ended the case right then. But for some reason, I don't sure about all the details of what was going on in my mind. But it says, no, let's take it to court. You know. Now, I was studying already in the meantime because the case, and I already thought, and I really should have won the case. But I really did win anyway. Even though I lost, I won. And I'll explain that to you in the end what happened. I studied all the laws on it. And I studied the laws about mailing lists. And the law on the mailing list was that when you're working for somebody who has a mailing list, they have to make you sign an agreement that you recognize that this mailing list belongs to them and you promise not to use the mailing list and so forth. You have to have a paper signed, not even oral. And there was a guy in Texas who, several people, one guy at least, that had a precedent case in Texas where a guy won on that, where he took a mailing list out and he used it. And because they had, and they all person said, well, there was an oral agreement, they said, not good enough, you need to have a written thing where they signed off on it and said, I will not use this mailing list, and you have to sign it. It wasn't signed. So the guy in Texas won his case, and he was able to use the mailing list, even though he took it away from this guy. So I had everything all lined up. I'm saying, this is going to work good. I said, because I was questioning, I didn't know all the laws on that. And I said, because he never even made an oral agreement with me, not let alone a signed agreement. He never said, you cannot take out these mailing lists. He never signed anything. So that was my case. And I thought I had a good case to win it. But I could have appealed it. I hate courts. So I just got out of here as quick as I could and didn't want to go back. So what happened was, we did this video conferencing thing. And you don't have to swear on the Bible in New Mexico. I don't know if Brother Michael Diamond sweared on the Bible or not. He may have, he may not have. But I just wanted to get him to lie anyway on a few issues that I knew that he wasn't going to tell the truth on, because I know he's probably trying to get me to do the same. But I got him on the issue of the money that they were hiding in the back of Messiah Montesano's black Cadillac. They had about $150,000 or $200,000 originally. And that's where we were living off of that money, in the back of Sal Montesano's Cadillac, which Brother Joseph was saving all the cash donations in New Jersey. And it was locked in a room. Javanieri knew about the money. And he had a whole bunch of cash up there. And that's what we were living off of. And I knew it was in the back of Sal Montesano's Cadillac in his trunk. And that's where he would go when he needed money. But he don't want nobody to know about that. And his bank accounts were frozen by Father Ashley and all that. So he couldn't get into his bank accounts. So I asked right away, I said to Brother Michael, I don't know, I think it was Sal Jr. first, Montesano Jr. I said, Sal, I said, did your father have money in the back of his black Cadillac and stashing cash back there from Brother Joseph and we were living off it? No. And now Brother Michael got up, I asked him the same question. No. I just wanted him to lie under oath. Now, it didn't have much to do with the case, but I just wanted to get them lying under oath. Just Mr. Pius, they're supposed to be the nice guys, right? Well, they certainly did have the money back there. Anyway, at the same time when we're doing this video teleconference thing, he's in New York, I'm over here in Santa Fe, and I got a chance to bring up the whole city of compositions and the anti-pope. We got into a lot of good dogmatic issues that the court got an earful on, all that kind of stuff, you know. But what happened too, it was interesting because the judge wasn't there. It was just the lawyers and us. The judge would listen to it later and pick what he wants to pick out. So Brother Michael's lawyer's next to me, and he's harassing me. You can't say that. No, and I finally got so angry. I mean, he kept objecting. I said, if you keep objecting, I'm never going to be able to speak. I said, we're not going to get nowhere with that. There's no judge here to let me know if your objection is correct or not. I'm going to continue to speak. All right, well, you will speak and let the judge. I said, yeah, let the judge strike it out. We just stop objecting. Every time I spoke, object, objection, objection. But I kept speaking. What a mess it was, you know. So we were going back and forth, and I got my testimonies out there. Took a lot of time for me. But that's, in the end, that's all that I ended up doing. But it was like a penance and all that. And my whole thing was, wow, I mean, here I am 3 years later. This guy's still trying to come after me and silence me in New Mexico. So I got in court, too, then the judge heard the whole thing on the taping. He heard it. that I got up to witness and I told my side on the witness stand in front of the judge. And then the judge, I was talking to a witness, and he says, and the judge stops him and he goes, "Oh, Mr. O'Brien," he says, "according to you," he says, "everybody goes to hell." And I said, "Well, Your Honor, our Lord said almost everybody does go to hell. That is what happens." You know, so, in other words, he got a mouthful. The faith issues were coming up and all that. And we were talking about the Sinai compositions, Vatican II. I mean, it was all in there, you know. So this Jewish judge is listening to this whole thing. And finally, when the decision comes in, and I come down there to hear the decision, the judge gets up and he says, "Here's my decision in the case. Mr. Ibrani had no right to the mailing list, but there's no malice in the case. I don't see no malice. He really thought he could have it. I don't see there's no malice in this. Just give the mailing list back." And that was really the extent of the end of it. I didn't pay the legal fees of his lawyers. It didn't cost me a penny. And it cost him a lot of money. The lawyer he got was a high expensive lawyer. I don't know how much it cost him. So it came down to that. And then he said, "Well, Mr. O'Brien," he said, "you know, it's like if you buy someone's car and there's a fur coat in the trunk, you don't own the fur coat. You brought his computer, but you don't own the mailing list." And I wasn't going to get him to say, "Well, Your Honor, and that's not 100% correct, because with a mailing list, they need to..." I brought that up even, too, on the Texas case. You need to have a signature, and they have to make you sign it, and you have to have it and show that you recognize that this is his mailing list. Other than that, you can use it. And I had precedent cases. Well, he didn't take that, and he didn't want to hear that. So I know I said, "Oh, I could appeal this thing. I could bring it up." But for what purpose? I'll be going to court for I don't know how many more years to get this thing done. So I said, "It's not going to cost me anything." "Yes," he says, "destroy the mailing list that you have. Don't use it." And that's the end of it. So that was the sum. He says, but he says, "I don't see no malice." So that ended the criminal case. Could not go to a criminal case. So it didn't cost me anything. So I don't know how much it cost him. But it must have cost him a lot of money for that lawyer. And at the end, his lawyer comes up and he says, "I'm sorry." He says, I'm just doing my job. I'm sorry." He's really like apologetic and a nice guy. I said, "I understand. You're doing your job. I'm not angry at you. I understand." I said, "You got to do your job." Then the judge came up to me after the case and he said, "This is the most interesting case he ever had." The judge himself. And I said, "I hope this Jewish judge converts, because he got a mouthful during this case." Well, that was the end of it. So here I am. I still was able to communicate with the people I had. Could not use the mailing list. And even though I lost the case, I won the case. Because it didn't, but it cost me time. I was able to get out to the few people. He had people, even Brother Michael Diamond, like these bastards that hated me anyway, testifying that, "I got this piece of mail from Mr. Ibrani and I never solicited it. It was offensive to me," you know, because it was the Sinai compositions and all the strange voices. John Paul II was an anti-pope, he's a heretic. And I never gave him permission to send me any mail. In other words, he was misusing Brother Michael's mailing list to harass us with these letters. You know, so he had a few of those people in there, you know, that were more than willing to speak up against me about. And so I got the use of the four, the people that might have been only 200 people even. I don't know, 200, 400. It wasn't a lot of people. I even said that. "Well, you want to, don't flay anyone, a lot of people. What are you, crazy? What do you think I am over here? You know, I think I'm like drawing in the bucks." He must have thought I was just drawing in the bucks. Yeah. And that's why I have nothing. I mean, I had zero. I'm telling you. I was living off of Felix Martinez. Later on, I had to go out and get a job as a paper boy and all that. So anyway, the situation with that particular mailing is here this kid is coming down foaming at the mouth. And of course, it's a battle. And he's trying to prevent me from really presenting the teachings of the Catholic Church. Now, if you look at my Strange Voices videotape and you look at the positions he now holds today to be correct. All right? But it's been a never-ending battle of people trying to shut me up, character assassinate me, push. I even had one guy write me, he says, "Rich, if you keep moving around, I don't know where to contact you. You're over in Wayne, New Jersey, then you're over in Pequannock, New Jersey in a rooming house, then you're over there in Chimayo, then you're down to Corpus Christi, now you're over to TRC, you know, you're all over the place." But finally, I'm here now in TRC where God told me you're going to be in the right place at the right time. And that's where I am now. And I've been here for quite some time. But this is to give you a little information about how that devil followed me through the Diamond Brothers. I said, "Leave me alone. Get out of here. If I'm saying something wrong, be like a man and refute me in public. He's got to go to Caesar for help." help. That filthy bastard's got it. And now he's dragged into court by Caesar again, by Eric Coyle. Devils fighting devils. Eric Coyle fighting the diamonds. Two devils fighting devils. One devil fighting the other devil. The diamonds are the greater devils in this case. Eric Coyle is the lesser devil, but there's still two devils. Even he is Eric Coyle, because he backed off on faith issues for his court case. But this is what happened on this. The Diamond Brothers, this kid is vicious. He'll do anything that he can to keep, and I said it many times, Brother Michael Diamond is only about being famous. And to be famous, you need money. Money's not his number one love, but he wants money to be famous. Famous is his number one thing. He wants to be famous. He wants to be the hero, the big shot, and everything. And he hates people personally, one-on-one. He doesn't care about people at all. If you ever met the guy, I spoke about that elsewhere. So this mailing list incident, the most it took from me was a lot of my time. I had to go down and study all the legal. I had more than one. I had a couple of precedent cases. I understood the law. Mailing lists. I did have a right to that mailing list, but I'm not going to appeal it. I said, look, I already sent it out. Whoever responded, responded. I'm allowed to respond to them. Just leave it at that. And then I started responding with these, between these two people. That's how I started my journals for these 200 or 400 people. And I was just sending stuff out to them, and they were telling other people, and a few other people would then get contact me. Never a really great amount of people. And then we entered up into the website arena. We're working on the website. But I always said, when the time really comes, and it's not time yet, God's going to be my public relations manager. God is the one who's going to be able to, God is the one who's going to direct everybody to us, not advertising in newspapers and going to famous radio stations and with these apostates. And the minute the Diamond Brothers got themselves onto these big radio stations, you already know they're in the devil's camp. The Satan will never let anybody on that radio station unless he serves his purpose. Art Bell and all these shows, straight out of the pits of hell. You think God's going to save the Catholic Church by Art Bell? Or these other guys, I don't know who they are. Alex Jones is the brother Michael Diamonds is like a new Malachi Martin. He's like the new Alex Jones. You think God needs those bums to save his church? No, he doesn't. When God does one major miracle for us, and if we stay faithful, he will, the whole world is going to be directed to us, and these guys are going to be forgotten, dead, buried, gone, eliminated. It's the end of it. I warned them about, unless they convert. I always said before, even now, I pray for the Diamonds, I pray for Felix, I pray for them all. I hope they convert even now. But if they don't, my number one prayer is if they're obstinately of bad will, kill them. If there's some good will, punish them. Don't let them continue to be deluded by their temporary success so they can convert. But I know one thing, if God doesn't punish them, there's no hope for them. Because every time, what I see here is the devil is always putting somebody in my way to take away from the mission God has given me and to try to detract it, to try to put it onto someone else and to take the attention away from me or to prevent me from speaking. Now, as you see, I'm still here. I'm speaking. I got the website. And even that's why when the Diamonds go up there and when he talks about me, what does he say? R.I. He will not even give my name. He'll use other people's names. He'll talk about all the Daly and all these other guys. But when it comes to me, it's R.I. And why does he do the R.I.? Because if they ever went to my website and read the stuff on him, they would find out the kid's a total fraud. I refute him. I tear him to pieces. I tear him to shreds. He's a lying, filthy, bastard, bum, him and his brother. And in the end, if they don't repent, they're going to get it. And I said in this tape later on, as you can listen to more of it, that I warned his brother Bob, that you're going to, and I told him, you're going to be famous. Very famous. Not very famous. I said famous, you know. Who knows? Maybe he'll even be on regular TV one day. But I said, you're going to be famous for a very short period of time, and then you're going to lose everything, and it's all done. For nothing. And it's all done. So, that was the... were you there when the mailing list incident was going on? Yeah, you were there. Yeah, you saw the whole thing. Yeah, Ron's the one who drove me there. Yeah, a couple of times. Yeah. He took me down there. You saw the... Oh, man, what a lot of time. It took time. Oh, yeah. That's why whenever I come up with these lawsuits, I go, here we go. Yeah, you should take me there. I stay hours in the library with the law books. How to study the how do you make a motion? How do you do this? And how do you do that? What are the precedent laws? Oh, and you know what? What even makes me more angry is I had the case, but I didn't care because in the end, the judge said, well, he wasn't malicious. He really thought he could have it. He didn't do it like out of malice. So, you know, just give him it came down to it, just give him the list back. So it didn't cost me a penny. It cost nothing. And it cost him, I don't know how much to pay for that lawyer is. And now God's punishing him with the Urk Oil lawsuit. When you're like that, you get some big shot coming around who's going to take you to court and drag you through the courts. Everything was to stop the evidence. The Second Coming of Jesus Christ tape was even a real, real hard thing to get done. And God had to kill Brother Joseph for me to do that. Because Brother Joseph wasn't going to let me do it. He killed him a couple weeks before that. And then that's when I was able to do the Second Coming of Jesus Christ tape. Because Brother Joseph was not going to let me speak no more. But Brother Michael did. And he thought, after I do this tape, we're going to be famous, man. We're going to be rolling in a bucks. We're going to be famous. And it was the opposite. And then he panicked after we weren't rolling in the bucks. You know. And then when he followed me to New Mexico, I went, oh, this kid's straight out of hell. That reminds me of the Doug Bursell thing when I was speaking up with the Canazis, and he was going to walk out there saying, well, Rich, no, you don't, back off, don't talk about the St. Benedict Center, you know. I says, wait a second, I go up there and I can't talk. Now I'm not even up there on my own turf, supposedly Massachusetts, at the Canazis house, and you're going to tell me to shut up? I ain't going to shut up. And that's when Doug Bursell was threatened to walk out and all that. But everywhere I go, it's shut Ibrani up. And if you can't shut them up, character assassinate them. And these have been, and I'm still here, and I'm going to stay here as long as God wills it to be. And these people are going to be the ones who are going to be left in the dust.
You're not going away.
We're not, no. Not very shortly, that's for sure.
How do they sucker so many people into listening to them? I mean, there's such frauds in
them. Well, people love frauds. Well, look at people. Look who's famous today. Look at the Hollywood goofballs. That's who the Diamonds are with. They get a witch on there who starts talking about how she has a black cat that could bounce off the walls and prophesy, and people are listening to Art Bell. That's why they're listening to the Diamond Brothers. They're a bunch of knuckleheads. Ultimately, that's why they're getting onto these shows. But it's it comes down to this, too. I'm not saying they're as crazy as that. Some things they say are true. But what's happening is when the devil gets you on his major networks and you get on a radio show, he's on one of those what we call second-tier radio, like Alex Jones and all that. When you get up that high, into that level, you're already working for the devil, and people hear you. And you become a celebrity. It's simply just because you can have the stupidest person get up there and talk about dumb things for 2-3 weeks, and people are emailing them. They want to find out about the guy. Look at these goofy people that are famous today. But the mere fact, I don't need Art Bell for my PR work. Man, God does one miracle. The Blessed Mother comes over to his property and does one major miracle. And you're going to have the whole world beating down our doorstep because of God going before us with his miracles. We don't need Art Bell. We don't need NBC, ABC, BBC. I don't know what else he's got on there. They want to get on the radio stations. They want to go out and do here. And he pushes himself. He advertises himself. He publicizes. He's out there. Now, I'm not totally against all of that. There is a degree where you got to do the human work and maybe put billboards up in the day when we got to do that. But when you're starting to go into these satanic media, you're rising up into the arena. You better look in the mirror at yourself and say, how did I ever get this high? Why is the devil allowing me to be on our belt? Why is the devil allowing this? Because I call the Diamond Brothers the last stopgap before you come to the full truth, because they have a lot of truth, but they don't have the whole truth. And where they don't have the truth, they're abominable when it comes to their heresies of praying in communion with notorious heretics, of not having to abjure to come into the Catholic Church, of denying the salvation dogma. They pray in communion with the rat man right now. These kids are holding on to such humongous heresies that even one of those heresies I just mentioned to you will keep you outside the Catholic Church. And he's like one of the last. My point is, too, the very things he attacks me on, and that's why I like, he's actually publicizing for me. Look how vicious Rich is, how rough he is. Yeah. I only want rough people with me that are willing to die and kill for Christ. That's all I want with me. You people are a bunch of wimps. Stay where you belong. It separates the wheat from the chaff. But this is a little, God wants this to be, Lord only knows how many people, what they're saying in the background about this mailing list incident. You go look at it in Santa Fe on the court record, and you're going to see what the verdict is, and you're going to see what happened. And that's what happened with the mailing list. This recording was produced by Mary's Little Remnant, 302 East Joffrey Street, Truth or Consequences, New Mexico, 87901-2878. And can be accessed on my St. John the Baptist website at www.johnthebaptist.us.